See, like, are you a good kind of investor or not? So you passed. Excellent. Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. So for like building our brand in today's society, I feel like we live in a 3-second society. I mean, that's according with Facebook. In order to get a view on the video that you post, they have to at least linger for 3 seconds. So for people building their brands, organizations, entrepreneurs, not just investors, what's the biggest takeaway that they can use to grow their brand in today's society?
You're listening to a podcast that encourages you to embrace your vulnerabilities and authentic self. This is your transformation station, and this is your host, Greg Favazza.
Michael Delpreet. Interesting. I like it. I like your background too.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, definitely. How long you been doing this podcast life?
Podcast life. We have some here at the organization. We have something called the Azria Show, and we are about 125 episodes in.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like my main podcast, and I just do other random things on the side, but that would be the main gig.
Nice. For your transformation station, I'm at episode 117, making this one, 118.
Awesome.
And yes. Yeah. And, I love it. Been doing it for 3-4 years now, off and on. And, I'm trying to finally get committed into it now that I got my bachelor's degree, trying to figure out how I want to take life to the next level. Awesome. And just be a diehard fan, you know?
Well, 118 episodes is pretty committed.
Yes, exactly. Like, I'm not going back. I'm just going to keep moving forward.
Yeah, man. That's cool. Like, I always read like a stat I always hear. I'm not legit it is, but the average podcaster quits by 50, under 50 episodes. So that's pretty cool. A little inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah, but I came across something similar with Celsius. Hell yes. Usually I have one. I don't like that flavor though. It's a nasty flavor.
They got to be sparkling for me.
Yeah, that's true. To satisfy the nicotine crave, you know, maybe.
No nicotine over here. I'll hit a cigar every once in a while.
Oh yeah. No, that's cool. No, like I guess they around 13 to 11 to 13. Then at that point, they fall off. I guess that was around COVID. So I don't know what's happening recently.
It's a lot of work, man. Like, if you have a VA or something, it obviously takes a lot of pressure off. But podcast is a big project. I mean, even at me, like, we're at the same level of how many episodes. It's like every week at Friday at 8. It's like, where's that? Like, it's part of many stuff we could discuss. It's like you're always waiting for that. Like, when's that big viewership hitting? When's all those, you know, but you just got to. Day after day, just keep at it, man, and it'll pop one day.
No, that's interesting. I just knocked you away for some reason. I want you to come back to me. I would really like to just go into understanding, because you focus on essentially brand awareness as you're an investor, right? You still do that?
Yeah, I still invest to this day. Yeah, I invest every day and as well as run the organization, yes.
Okay, beautiful. Like, I would love to just look at understanding brand recognition and why it's crucial in today's marketplace and kind of playing devil's advocate and look at the factors of investing isn't for everybody. And I think people should know that. Like, it sounds, we make it sound so easy that you can just, just rent out your house. I mean, just do Airbnb or whatever you can do. But I got sucked into a Robert Kiyosaki little seminar, and I went with somebody, and she got sucked in. She was all in, and I saw past it. But it's like, you know what? Fuck it. If she's going to go all in, I'm going to be a supportive person and just go all in and be the best at it. I just want to lay out a foundation for our listeners that, hey, there's there's two sides. Let's look at both sides.
Yeah. Oh, by all means, I'd be happy to talk about that. It definitely needs to be, because one of our missions here is, you know, for me, I'm the average guy working 50 hours a week, never had any like college direction or any inspiration from family, right? It's like, and real estate changed my life, man, you know, and if I could pass that on to someone else and they just bought one house in their life, one rental, and it made their life a little better. I mean, I win there. I'll feel good. So let's talk about it.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, like, what would you tell somebody? Like, there's actually a lot more work than there is to being an investor, right?
Oh, when I mean, you know, it. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's work. It's not what you see on Instagram, like, you know, Lamborghinis and watches. It's like, it is. It's real. You could do it. Just like running any business and being successful at anything. But there's application after that learning process, right? And there's no safety net. There's bumps and bruises, and there's learning and experience. And so it's a business. Mm-hmm. It's not just like, hey, I bought a rental property, I'm a millionaire. You know, it's far from that.
Yeah, like, because I had to look at the situation. All right, I had this knowledge of – from the Robert Kiyosaki to build credit and build it fast, and just assessing my credit report just to remove any remarks on there that are out of date, just bringing it to the attention of the three bureaus. And essentially that was bringing up my credit score and to be able to utilize my military benefits to get a place. And long-term, that was my end goal, was to use my VA and to, you have to live in there for 1 year, then you can lease it out. And I couldn't even make it a full year because of personal situations that affected and painted the whole home. So it's just like, you got to go. Can't be here. But for that situation, for people, it's just, there's a lot of aspects to it. You actually have to hire professionals. You have to be able to trust these people to manage the place. And then they have to follow this certain belief system that you have. Like for me, if I was going to lease out my place, I would want other veterans because I hold like a certain standard to myself and to my property. And that's kind of how I expect other veterans to act. So what would you tell people, Dan?
Well, you know, when it comes to rental properties, like you have your rules along with the house, right? Mm-hmm. And either you're the manager or you have a property manager. So you can't, I don't know what state or city you're in or whatever it may be, but like there's also fair housing laws, right? But like there's rules. You have a contract in place. Hey, no pets, right? You know, abide by the laws of the city and stuff like that. So they have to abide by that, right? It's in the contract. So if they break that, they have to move out. So and there's also you get to choose who lives in your property. So you have the tenant screening process. Mm-hmm. Does it always work out perfect? No, right? Do people slip through the cracks? Yeah, of course. But there's always processes in place to warn them or fine them or remove them. So I don't know if that hits your. Are we on?
Dude, we're just recording, man. Yeah.
That's the best way. I always say the best interviews are before the interview.
Yeah, it is. Because you don't know what the fuck's going on. It's just kind of happening.
Yeah, let's talk, man. Break it down. So, okay, let's go back to that question then. I was thrown off.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, you're good. No, you're good. So, like, I understand, like, I feel like the system is in play for the tenant, which should be that way because we want to protect everybody from scams, frauds, and get stuck in a situation where you feel like you're now facing coercion by the landlord. Like, why am I doing this shit? But yeah, break it down for us.
No, man, there shouldn't be any issues. There's bad landlords and there's bad tenants. It goes both ways, right? But that's why there's the agreement in place, the contract, right? You live in here, you live your life, you pay your rent, take care of your family, respect the house, in short, right?
Yeah.
Same thing for as a landlord, right? Something breaks, something needs work, I'll fix it. Like I'm proud of that as a landlord. I want to provide safe, clean, affordable housing. Mm-hmm. Are there landlords probably out there that might push things off and neglect things and ignore calls? Maybe, right? Mm-hmm. But there's processes for tenants. There's landlord-tenant laws. There's places you can call in your town to report that landlord if your house is not safe. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's both sides of this.
Yeah, that's true. And then like as far as the landlord goes, you can enforce a lease to own kind of option. I feel like that would kind of leverage the individual to take pride in the home as the possibility of getting the home long term. But I mean, today, nobody really wants to own a home. So at that point, you get a free deposit and they move on after 3 years.
That's not the goal, right? You're thinking right. That mm-hmm. is a strategy, lease option, mm-hmm. Lease with the option to buy. So someone that will take more pride in the house, they will, want to invest into it because it ultimately will be theirs. That is the goal, of course. Mm-hmm. But I don't look at it like, hey, I get a deposit, right? Like, mm-hmm. Yes, that I do hear that in the community. Like people might say things like that. Oh, those do it again. Yeah, for us, it's not a lot of work for us. They move out. You're going to spend that money fixing the place up anyways. That's what the deposit's for, is to kind of, mm-hmm. if that does happen, you clean the place up, fix the holes in the wall, fix the AC, whatever it is, mm-hmm. and you're back to zero again, and then you go find someone again. No, if I put someone in a lease option, it's to sell the house. Mm-hmm. It's to provide housing for the community. Yes, I will make money on the deal, right? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's like, but yeah, never to like say, hey, I got a free deposit. I don't even, that's not even.
Okay. I wanted to see like what your personality was, if you were for that or against it. So that was like a little test there. See, like, are you a good kind of investor or not? So you passed. Excellent.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So for building our brand in today's society, I feel like we live in a 3-second society. I mean, that's according with Facebook. In order to get a view on the video that you post, they have to at least linger for 3 seconds. So for people building their brands, organizations, entrepreneurs, not just investors, what's the biggest takeaway that they can use to grow their brand in today's society?
Well, welcome to the club. I'm still trying to figure it out. So it's an ongoing thing. If I could say anything, it's consistency. You know, it's being yourself and doing it every single day, not comparing yourself to the next person. Or, you know, I understand you got to test and tweak things to get better and, you know, try things that see what works and what doesn't. But mm-hmm. I'm not going to go outside the boundaries of like who I am, what I stand for. Right. So, I fight that every day, man. I look at some of my Instagram things. It's like 400 views. It doesn't even go over 200. I'm like, what's going on here? Like mm-hmm. I could easily get a picture of an ass and say, get rich tomorrow, get your attention. And mm-hmm. then say, hey, come join my organization. I just don't roll. I don't know. I can't do that.
Well, maybe that's what we need. Like, that's what I mean. I'm trying to look at it as far as the type of people that we're appealing to. I'm looking at the majority of the population who wants to buy a home, millennials. I mean, how would we get their attention? I mean, maybe a big ass. And then, but it's not really an ass. It's like your fist, but it makes them think. And then right in the middle, you got your little logo.
Yeah, so put my fist up, whatever, buy a house or a bunch of, I don't know. So, but like, you know, so here's the thing, the people that do pay attention to that and go viral and that stuff, yeah, it catches everyone's attention. Mm-hmm. However, is that the demographic or person you want going into your business? Is that your true customer? I noticed a lot of people that just, like, when we put like a funny, you know, meme style short or whatever, we get tons of follows, tons of attention. But then they're gone. They're not the type of person that's going to come into your business, if we're talking about branding, and actually go to the education, network with the community, participate and take action on what they're learning. It's most likely that person that's trying to get rich quick. So that really doesn't fit our model. Well, whereas you mentioned you went to a seminar, that fits mm-hmm. that model. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. they just want them to come in, you swipe the card in the back, raise your credit on your credit card and yeah. buy the program. And if you do, it's going to work. If the information's real, like yeah. I don't doubt the information, but is that person at the mindset in their lives or they're ready to be that, become the person they need to be that millionaire? You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So, whereas us, it's more of real estate investing is a long-term game. You're planting seeds and you're watering it and you're getting sun every day. That's mm-hmm. that's real estate.
When you say like the person's not ready, like are we looking at, do they have the social support or the resources?
Everybody's different. So here's a story. I had a gentleman. I'm big on, affirmations, visioning, thinking your goals, like just thinking through the future and having a clear picture. And there's a gentleman that came in. He wanted to pick my brain kind of thing, right? So, all right, cool. This is when I used to do it all the time and talk to anybody. And so he's like, we're talking about, who we are, whatever. He's like, we started talking about vision boards for some reason. I was like, I got one. And I was like, I told him about how I made it and all that stuff. I was like, where do you have your vision board? Because mine was like right on the side of my desk in my office, right? And he's like, oh, I got mine right here. And he pulled out his wallet, opened his wallet, took out a piece of paper, unfold, paper's getting bigger, unfold, bigger. I'm like, oh, you got it in your wallet like that, all folded mm-hmm. up. And he's like, yeah. My wife doesn't believe in this woo-woo stuff, and she gets embarrassed when I bring it up around friends or family. I was like, oh. And I was like, well, this isn't going to work. Like, if you don't have support from your friends and family or especially your spouse, let's just keep mm-hmm. it there. It's not going to work. And he never seen him again, you know, maybe he's doing it for all I know, but like, mm-hmm. But that's the idea. So when you go to support, yeah, you need to be around the right people. So I love friends and family, and I'm not saying stop hanging out with them or not love them, but you need to get around people that are who you want to be, because they're going to drive you and show you, share resources, build you up, pull you up. Mm-hmm.
As you were saying, what was the folded piece of paper? What did that end up?
That was his vision board.
So what did it look like? Was it like, I could just imagine like maybe one thing, like it just says, my wife, like he's a giant piece of paper and it's unfolded.
Yeah, dude, this was like 7 years ago, man. I don't remember the exact drawing, but like, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? It was just his notes, his vision, his goals, like whatever he, you know, that's what it was. So he looks at it every day on his own.
Mm. Okay. Interesting. So yeah. Now if we were to like segue away and just look at like social media, it's a powerful tool for building relationships, expanding our networks.
Yeah.
What are some like actionable advice that you could give to our audience that can, where they can use this tool to leverage their brand and get awareness out there?
Sound really boring.
Please.
Consistency, right? So just doing it, right? When I, as I do this more, right, I'm starting. I start to make more money or whatever. I could be more strategic, hire more people to help me with do more things. So it just depends where they're at, right? Mm-hmm. However, it all started with just picking up the phone and hitting record or take a picture or write something in text every single day. Like, even though I get low views, I don't feel like I wish I was had more type of stuff. When mm-hmm. you're in a daily life and go to networking meetings or going around town, people are like, yo, I see you every day. I see you every day. I'm like, shit, I don't see how, but they're saying it. So it must mm-hmm. work, right? So I think it's depending on the person we're talking to, it's really just doing it every day. And I think you just like anything else, as you do something more, you get better at it. The more mm-hmm. you fail, the more you fall down. You're like, I'm not going to do that again, or I'm going to try it this way now. And you start doing that with pictures, videos, questions. Your questions get better. You start becoming more confident, right? And you start doing it more. It's just a snowball.
Mm-hmm. With the leveraging this consistency, I mean, if you were to teach someone your method, how would you convince them to follow consistency? Like, there's more to it than just consistency.
How would I convince them to become consistent? How would I show them to be, why it's worth being consistent?
I mean, however you want to look at it, how would you convince them to be consistent in the first place?
Well, first I would try to see, ask them if they had anything that they've ever succeeded at and how they did it. So that might be like, well, there's proof, right? Mm-hmm. But all I could just say is what goes on in my life, man. Like, I've been investing for 12 years, right? Mm-hmm. It went from, like I said, man, at 1 o'clock in the morning, putting little signs in the street by myself, handwriting signs to get people to call me, not knowing how to market or nothing, to owning the largest real estate investing association in the country. So I think that has something to say, because I never gave up, man. I failed. I got beat up. I got sued. You name it, man. I just kept going. So I just myself as an example. I don't know how.
What yeah, else? No, this is great. Yeah. You
know, I don't know, man. So I don't have like a magic pill to say, hey, this is what you do. But I just lead through example, man. That's all I can really say.
So like with your time doing that, like what was something that you've taken away out of those years being an investor?
In what capacity? So what have I taken away? Just being an investor over the years, what have I taken away?
Beautiful. So what I'm looking at, it's a universal kind of like application to, like, as far as brand awareness. We all have the same thing. We all want to build a brand, whether we're a podcaster, mm-hmm. investor, or an entity for your corporation, their own awareness. So what's, like, out of all these years, what's some advice that you could give to people that are tuning in? That like, oh, we like his hat. It says we love houses, but okay. What can he teach us? Yeah.
Be shameless. Like, well, I'll promote myself, talk about what I'm doing. It's a shameless promotion, like mm-hmm. not being afraid. Cause one thing when new people come to want to getting into investing, they don't want to tell their friends and family. They feel like they're boasting or they're bragging if they're like, hey, I'm buying houses or I'm trying to flip houses or sometimes people have that limiting belief that that your friends are going to think you're better than them or whatever. So I'm shameless. I'll tell you everything I'm doing. I'll respect the conversation. I know how to have a conversation, but like, I'll tell everyone everything that I'm doing. So like I said, the hat, I like to do whatever I can to spark conversations. So that is something that I've learned. I do it from a place of, I know it's not going to happen fast. And I know it's going to take a while for fruit to bear. And then I also do it because I truly care about the people I'm helping. So in the organization, I have I started off with nothing, and I built this to be in this position because I've always tried to help the other person that I'm in business with. Right, whether it's educating people to become real estate investors or veteran investors to become better, whatever it may be, or when I'm buying houses from people that need to sell quickly, they're usually in a tough situation. Not, mm-hmm. yes, you want to make a profit. Yes, you got to do your business, but at the same time, I won't put them in a worse spot. You know what I'm saying? It has to get them out of that situation to work out, or I just won't do the deal. So I think that also, it's kind of like karma, reap what you sow, all that mm-hmm. stuff. It doesn't come back right away all the time, but I've noticed over time, you get that phone call that's like, hey, Mike, I got this deal. You want to be a part of it, or whatever it may be. And that's the payday. You know, it's a year down the road, 5 years down the road. So that type of stuff, the relationships I've built from doing the right business that just come back around, you know, that's what I would share, man.
Okay. So like, what do you like focus in real estate investing? I know you can look at billboards, you can look at mobile home parks. Where do you focus at?
Me, I focus on mainly in the single family homes. Mm-hmm. So it depends what strategy I'm doing. So wholesaling real estate, when you're getting a property under contract and you're assigning your interest in that piece of paper. You never actually buy the house, use your credit or your money.
So it's like a deed, right? You get them to sign this piece of paper, and essentially You own, like, you have rights, legal rights to it.
No deed.
Not a deed.
No transfers of anything like that. It's a contract. It's basically one piece of paper says, Mike would like to buy your house at X price, and seller would like to accept that at X price, and we will go to a title company and handle the transaction. So that's what it is. And I just basically say, I have the right to sell my interest in that contract to another person. So that's all I do. So that I could do that with anything, a bicycle, a house. So, you know, I'll do condos, mobile homes, multifamily. So I could do that in with any type of housing. So so that's fine. When it comes to fixing and flipping, so, you know, finding an ugly house and making it pretty and selling it to an end user, HGTV kind of stuff, I mainly focus on single families.
Okay, cool. So let's go further into that. Now, like, are you familiar with, I think it's called iBuyers? It's tell us about that. And is that affecting the brokers?
Got it. So iBuyers are more like tech companies, right? They have big money behind them, corporate money, hedge fund money, whatever it is. And they everything's pretty streamless through, you know, you get online offers and you're dealing, you know, so they're just big funds that can buy a lot of properties with a lot of money. So how does it hurt? Well, they have agents. They are probably licensed and they have agents working for them. Mm-hmm. It's just competition in some way. It's just another competitor doing business a little bit differently. Still same rules, still same game. They do buy a lot. They buy houses cash, so they bump into the investor world. And then they list their houses and they make it a little bit more convenient. They cut out the agent a little bit more. So agents not as needed, but they still need to be licensed. So it's just another business model, you know. So I don't think it affects too much.
Yeah, I look at it as like it's Carvana for like compared to a regular traditional dealership.
Yeah, I hear. Yeah, I agree. So it's like, you know, the big parts about that, it's outside of that, like that there's the iBuyers and then there's like corporate hedge funds coming in. So they're buying houses like it's a business, but they're taking away that emotional home from it's a business model, right? So they're coming in here, they're buying up the home. They're all the COVID boom, all that stuff. They were first time home buyers were out of the game, man. If you didn't have big cash, if you weren't like people would sell their homes from California for Arizona, at least they would come into Arizona because it's a lot cheaper and there's outbidding everybody. The hedge funds are paying 100% of value for the house. Yeah. They're like, it took a lot of opportunity away from the average person in the community that needs a house for their family so their kids could go to school, you know? So it affects in that way as well. And now they're doing build to rent. They're out here building communities just to rent them out, which is good because we have a lack of housing. So maybe gives people an option to maybe get out of an apartment and move into a house, right, for their family. Mm-hmm. They still don't own. But 80% of the permits to build new homes were for build-to-rent corporations. They weren't
interesting.
They weren't for me and you to go build a house for our family or, you know, a small builder to build a house for, you know, to sell, you know. So there's ways to look at it like that.
Built-to-rent, now I want to address that. But before, I know when I purchased a house, like I was going at it for 6 months straight to the point where I'll go see the house. I'm like, okay, great. I like it. Then I try to put a bid down and it's too late. It got to the point where I saw a house online. All right, 110, send it. Like, I couldn't even go there to look at it because it was happening so quick.
It's unfortunate, man. Yeah, that it was crazy, man. It's like, even on the – here, I'll even twist it. Like, on the real estate agent side, right, they have a fiduciary responsibility to protect their client. Mm-hmm. I'm, like, looking at it like – you know, sometimes like you tested me on a question, right? So people have this stigma against real estate investors. But then when an agent goes out there and they're creating a bidding war and they're having a first-time home buyer waive their appraisal, waive their inspection or whatever, do a short inspection, waive the appraisal, buy the house as is, and they're just a family trying to buy a house and they're getting them to pay 50 grand over and they go and get an award at the office.
Yeah.
Like, what's the difference? Like, you know, I don't know, man. So many ways to look at this.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have a developed rapport. Luckily, the individual, God, I really wish, because I would love to yell her name out right now. She did a fantastic job. She dealt with me with the very bare minimum that was in the housing market of putting out for a 4-bedroom house. Like, it was amazing. We got it for the price, and she was just grinding for 6 months. We finally got something. So once I figure her name out again, I feel bad for even saying that. I just want to holler and give her a little shout out. But for build to rent. Now, are you referring to as modular homes?
No, single family. Well, and remember, a lot of my discussions and come from Arizona.
Okay,
because that's where I'm at. So, no, they're coming in building communities. I'm talking 50, 100, 200 houses and developing them and then renting them out.
Interesting. Now, I like to try to put multiple viewpoints for our listeners who are current buyers who have already had a home and wants to get rid of it, and also possible investors. Now, like, have you ever heard of this, this approach or model is you go out and buy a piece of land, hopefully filled with acres of trees, then go cut those fucking trees down, sell them to the lumber fucking yards, and then that's going to get you money. You put a fucking modular home down, and all you got to do is the electric and the sub pump, and bam, you're set with like a 15-year warranty.
Well, the first part about the trees, I'm not familiar with. One, yeah. I'm in Arizona, so it's maybe cactuses. I don't know. But the other part of it, though, is, yeah, I get to see it, right? It's possible. Yeah, people are out coming out here. Okay, so when everyone's coming to Phoenix, one of the fastest growing cities, so what does that do? Inflation's already a thing around the country. Mm-hmm. Cost of living goes up. So you got a $1,500 for a 1-bedroom, right in the middle of the town, right? If you're working at the hotel, like, that just doesn't work. So you got to go 20, 30, 40 minutes out, and it's hard to come back. And so people are moving. The people that have always been here, now they start going to the outskirts. So what people are doing is buying land on the outskirts, say a 5-acre parcel. Yeah, you could buy a 5-acre parcel from someone that doesn't want it anymore, very cheap. Let's just whatever that can be. Every city's different. And then you could split them. And then you could take that 5-acre parcel and break it into 5 1-acre parcels.
Interesting. Go
buy a brand new modular home for $80,000. Mm-hmm. Drop it on, buy it when you get a well and sewer or whatever, depends on the area. Mm-hmm. So land, split it, get the well, get the water, get the sewer. Obviously, you got to work with the city, permits, zoning. Mm-hmm. And then you buy a module or a brand new mobile home, so to speak, manufactured home, drop it on there. Affix it to the ground, and now it's a house, and then you can sell those things for $200,000, $180,000, whatever the situation. So there is a play there. That is, I am familiar with that, and is happening here in Arizona.
Yeah. You said mobiles. What's the difference for our listeners for modular versus mobile homes?
Don't quote me on that, man. I think mobile homes, because originally started like 50s, 60s, 70s, are actually cars. Right. Mm-hmm. They're considered cars, and they had like the wheels on them and the hook in the front. But I think as time progressed, they started just making them went from mobile to manufactured. Maybe there's a date thing involved. Mm-hmm. I don't know the exact definition.
I know mobile, they don't retain the resale value. I mean, I came across some really nice ones that has everything from a jacuzzi to a shower and a tub and a jacuzzi in the master bath. Like, wow. But it's a mobile home. It's like, I don't want that.
Yeah. Like it's, it's funny, right? It's like some people, that's all they want. It's like, maybe that's all they know. Right. So it's like, the mobile home never was popular until, it's never been like a desirable investment, let's say that.
Yes.
But now that there's a low shortage of housing, I mean, all the years in the business, man, never dealt with a mobile home over $100,000. Now that they're all over $100,000, man. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. In my area.
Yeah. Like I lived out in one in Colorado and loved it. It was out in Bayfield, and I was on 27.5 acres. It was beautiful. I had my barn, and I wasn't a fan of mobile homes, but that one had three baths, three beds, and the master had a jacuzzi and a shower and a tub. I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's cool. 27 acres. Yeah. It's amazing, man.
Yeah. But it's just like you try to find that out near a city or any place that's heavily populated, that ain't gonna happen unless you got $1 million.
Yeah, man. Like, you know, there's in Phoenix, there's subdivisions that are just, you own the land. It's not a park. You own the land and there's mobile homes on it. It's just, you could bring one on or you could buy one that's already there.
Oh, okay. I've heard of that. So then with that, you essentially would rent the place, the spot, like where your mobile home's sitting on.
That's a park. Yeah. So there's either you have someone that owns X amount of acres and then it's kind of like parking spaces in a way. It's called lot rent. And then you could drag your mobile home on there, or sometimes they're already there, and then you pay lot rent, but you own the mobile home, but you lease the land.
So interesting.
That's one way. And those are usually cheaper. So you can get those mobile homes. Those are even above 100 here in Phoenix, but you can get those a lot cheaper, 5, 10, 15 grand. It might be worth 30, 40, you know, but then you have separate, then you could either get mobile homes that own their own parcel of land, just like a neighborhood. They're subdivisions.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
So there's just so much to real estate. Like you said, there's so many ways to do this business. There's no right or wrong way. Man, or
no, and that's the beauty. Like what you said with like the mobile home, like parks. Now for people that are wanting to be prospective investors, like I know there's parks where there's probably maybe abandoned mobile homes or just whatever the case may be. And I feel like you could almost persuade the park owner to sell it to you cheap, or I would say looking at it, it's a burden that home, that this potential home that's sitting there, it's taking up space, it's not collecting any money. I'm looking at it as if you give it to me for free, I fix it up or I remove it, then I could sell it or just fix and flip kind of thing.
Yes and no. So now, in I would say something like that would probably happen in where the demand isn't as strong.
Okay.
Right. So here in Phoenix, the parks are like a hustle, man. So it's like they I think even in their contracts, their management contracts or for the leasing, they have like first right of refusal. So like sometimes you can't even sell it to someone. You got to call the park and be like, can I sell this to someone else or are you guys going to buy it? And then if you do sell it to someone else, they want to approve that person to even be in the park. So it's really, they make it really hard to kind of get creative and do this, because they probably want that, especially if there's demand, they want that. If someone passes away, they get that thing, pennies on the dollar from the family, and then they rent it out or they sell it. So that's what we're starting to see more common now here in Phoenix.
Interesting. So when somebody passes away, it goes to probate unless it's in a trust.
Well, now if we're talking in a park, a mobile home is considered a car. So this is DMV type stuff.
You're right. That is true. That is true.
Yeah. So it goes to the estate. I'm not an estate attorney or anything like that, but like, you know what I mean? So somehow if it's not abandoned, obviously the family member comes in. The car is a part of the will or the estate, the trust, whatever they have. But someone's going to come in there. You know, someone has to come in and get that registration into their name and deal with the park.
Interesting.
And I'm sure there's like an abandoned clause, right? Like if I'm sure the park has something, hey, this has been sitting here for six. I'm sure they have some type of rules or laws that allow them to, what's it called? Quiet title, right? There's strategies. Yes. They get abandoned cars into your name and stuff like that. So I'm sure they have their process laid down.
Yeah. Like, cause I was thinking like there could be lanes on, like, would they have a lane on a, like a DMV like title versus like a home? Like, cause I know if you hire contractors and you don't pay them off, then they can put a lien on it. So we try to sell the house. You will have to pay that first before the house can be, well, the title can be transferred over. Now I'm thinking, would it be like a salvage title? Like you can't have it, be able to sell it until you deal with the park issue, or am I just spitballing some crazy shit?
Yeah, you're out of my league right now. I don't know how car liens work or transferring titles for, you know, cause I personally, I would say I don't have much experience in the mobile home park world. You know, so I have some experience and good friends here at Esria that we always chat about, but I could deal with mobile homes that own their own land that are treated like houses. So that's a different story, right? So if you own the land, the parcel, the lot, and you have to do what's called getting it permanently affixed. So it's an affixture process. So for like $1,000, $2,000, whatever it is, you could have a professional go in. They literally like strap the mobile home down to the ground, like an engineer wise, right? So it's safe and doesn't blow away. And then they consider it real property. Now it's treated like a home. And then you go through the title process, the title company, get a deed and everything on the house.
That's weird. So it's almost like having a child. You get the social security card. So it's like you're getting it. Now it's a real house. They gotta make you
one. Yeah, man, for real. Yeah.
That's funny.
Just like your kid. You don't even own your kid. You don't even really own the house because you got property taxes.
Okay. No, that's interesting. Now let's look at another aspect. Like, for I know there's with buying and selling, like, is there like a model? No, not before we go to that. LLCs, like, are you familiar with how LLCs work from an investor's like point of view of protecting yourself? Like I know there's certain ways to set up LLCs. Like what's your view on it and how do you approach it for yourself?
I look at it as protection. It's like a shell over your personal self. So if you have a rental property, you buy it in an LLC and you have it inside that LLC. So if whatever happens, there's a lawsuit, they're not coming after your personal home, your personal bank account, your personal assets. They just deal with the LLC and everything the LLC owns. So the first and foremost thing is it's protection.
Okay. Now, like I want to go deeper in that because I know we can really you can set up your LLCs to be like unique. Like you can have one LLC and inside that one, there's four. And when with each one of the four, one can consist of your savings and checkings. The other one can consist of personal property, and then the other one can consist of whatever, and then it's surrounded by a trust.
Yeah, there's plenty of strategies like that. That's something you do with your estate planner or your wealth strategist or your attorney or your accountant, right? So there's one thing I always say, it's just depends on you, the investor, and what you're trying to do. So actually, I'm in the process of creating a trust. So, yes. So, I'll have a trust which will be owned by – or will own my LLCs, my rentals, or whatever. So, now if I pass away, no one comes in there and dictates. I don't have to go through probate or anything. The court doesn't decide that my son can or cannot own anything or sell anything, right? So, that's how I look at it, is protecting your family and your wealth and all your hard work. So outside sources can't penetrate that, right? Mm-hmm. I don't dive that deep. Like, if you're talking about like the shell game and just protecting and being hidden, yes. No one knows who you are. And you know what I'm saying? Like, that's real, man.
Yes.
I remember I was, I network a lot, right? Someone called me, right? Hey, Mike, want to get a phone call? Cool. And he goes, hey, your house is right by my office. You're on blah, 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 blah road. And I'm like, how'd you know that? You know what I'm saying? Like, it was the first time I ever met the guy. Never met him. I talked to him and he knew where my house was. You know what I mean? Like, that, obviously, it's probably not that hard these days to figure out where people live. Mm-hmm. However, you're like, man, that you feel wide open, right? So if someone wanted to sue you or they wanted to see, like, whatever. Just crooked people out there. So that's how I look at it. How can we protect ourselves? I don't do it in a way of like trying to. I don't know if that's where you're trying to go with it. You know,
yes.
Some people exactly. just try to have. Some people try to What do they do? You see in the movies, like the cowboy movie I was watching, they have like leaves and branches on their feet so it covers their tracks.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Like,
but yeah, looking at it from a protection, because I know with LLCs, you can have them linked to other states. As far as I know, with Nevada, the Secretary of State's name only populates there. So when they were to look up your information or your LLC, but in other states, no. I believe Florida, it's the same, but everywhere else, Arizona, I'm not sure.
That happens in, it's funny you bring that up. It's Delaware, Wyoming, and Nevada is where they have like that. I don't know the legal terms, like where it's just, you can't find the person, or they don't clearly say it publicly who the owner of that LLC. So yes, do people have LLCs within their Wyoming LLC or within their, yeah, all the time. Like I have partnerships where I buy houses with people. And when you buy houses at the end of the year, after all your, when to do your taxes, you get a K-1, which explains how much each partner makes. And you take your K-1, you submit it to your accountant, and you tell, you know, how much you made and lost for the government. So every time we tried to refi a house or do a deal with one of my partners, they had everything in a Wyoming LLC, and no one knew their address, their phone number. They knew nothing about them, and they would automatically assume, like, where's this guy? We can't refi this house. We don't even know. They think he's shady or something. But no, he's just – just protecting his stuff, man. He's a great guy, you know? So it's like, yeah, man, there's a new, I'm looking it up right now since we're talking about it. I got a guy, no attorney. He sent me an email about what you're talking about. Here we go. It's just passed privacy. Congress passed the Corporate Transparency Act. This law creates a new beneficial ownership information reporting requirement as part of the U.S. government's efforts to make it harder for bad actors to hide or benefit from their ill-gotten gains through shell companies or other opaque ownership structures. It's called the Beneficial Ownership Information Reporting System. So nice. That just happened. So it's a long, long article here. I'm sure don't want me to read it verbatim, but I just actually sent it to my attorney and said, is this something we need to inform our members about and educate everyone with LLCs? So, yeah, I guess they're maybe cracking that open at some level, I think mainly for the Wyoming part of it.
Interesting. That's beautiful. I mean, what was the name of that article? So then our listeners can find that if they want to go into that little loophole.
This gentleman, Lee Phillips, he's an attorney. He used to be like a politician. You know, he just sends me his articles every once in a while.
Beautiful.
So I don't know. I could forward it to you. And if you want to like upload it on this episode or something.
Definitely. Totally cool with that. Yeah, definitely. I would love to share that with everybody. That's interesting. Like, I understand with having this system of LLCs within one, if you somehow get sued or something where there's a lien or something that's pending against your LLC, I know it's beneficial to have those LLCs inside. Say if you have a self-directed banking account where you pay yourself, depending on, I think that's an S corp or C corp, and then you're able to still operate effectively, even though you have pending legal matters.
Yeah. I don't have that answer, man. I'm sorry. I don't really have too many or any legal pending matters. So I just have my bank account. So one thing I do is I do have a rental property with its own LLC. It's usually like if whatever the address is, sometimes I'll make the address. That's the name of the LLC. You open up a bank account, and I have one bank account with that one LLC, and you just run your business. So,
hell yeah.
I'm sure there's an attorney on here that could say you're wide open or something, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But that's just how I do it. You know, one LLC, one property, one bank account. It can be a lot of paperwork for your bookkeeper or stuff for tax reasons, but that's all, you know, that's how I do it.
Beautiful. No, I have all this information that it's kind of just useless. So I just want to just word vomit it out whenever I see fit.
All good, man.
Hell yeah. No, so that's something to be considered about, but actually looking at it as far as protecting ourselves from scams, from investors, like, is there like resources that people could look people up to say, oh, this guy has, he's been charged like numerous times with X, Y, and Z.
Man, one, just do any type of research you can, just straight internet, right? Mm-hmm. Start there. Yelp, Google review, Better Business Bureau. Just start there. Is there a way to look up? I don't know exactly, man. I don't know where you would look for.
Investor.gov. I just came across it. Yeah. So you just type the individual's name in there, and then you can pretty much gives you a rundown of everything about the individual.
I know I've got scammed.
Really?
Oh, hell yeah, man. Like, I know this guy, he got me good, man.
Do tell.
Do tell. Yes. Let's see if he's, I'm going to check right now, investor.gov.
Yeah.
I'm going to put his name in there. Let's see. So, you know, so one popular thing here is I do a lot of investing in Cleveland, Ohio. It's Midwest market, mm-hmm. lower.
We get a lot of listeners from Cleveland, Ohio on here.
All right. Yeah. Well, I got a lot of stories about that's all about podcasts. You know, so what happens there? It's low. When you're in California, Arizona, Miami, New York, you're talking 5, 6, 7 million, you know, for a house. Mm-hmm. So when people are trying to cash flow, it's harder to cash flow because, you know, how it's a lot more expensive. The rent to purchase ratio doesn't allow for a good return on investment. So people move to like the Midwest, right? Mm-hmm. So you can get a, you could buy a house for less than $100,000, put a tenant in there for $1,000. You got 10% return, give or take, whatever it is. Good investment. Mm-hmm. But what a lot of frauds do, they go, they live in California, they live in Florida, they're in this, they go in these nice areas, country clubs, wherever it is, and they're just well liked. And they say, hey, I'm investing in so and so in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. I'm killing it, I'm crushing it. Whatever they have their, whatever they do, mm-hmm. to fool people. And they just go buy properties. See, one thing, okay, we'll share with your listeners. If you ever lend anybody money, you must get first lien position on the property. Just like if you go borrow money from the bank, Bank of America, and they let you borrow money to and you pay them a mortgage, no different. So if someone's like, hey, let me borrow $100,000, we're going to flip this house, or we're going to rent this house, you got to get first lien position and record a mortgage note against that property through a title company. You do not give them a check and over the or at the kitchen table, whatever, mm-hmm. and then say, hey, this is your house, 123 Main Street. We're going to work on this. I'll let you know when I'm done. Oh. No. So it's so education. It goes back to education and being around the right people and doing a little bit of research. That's one thing we all, you know, you have to take some responsibility, right, of doing mm-hmm. some research about what you're getting into, whether friend, family, whoever it is. With this guy, these people out here, this one specifically, they're going out saying, look at me, I'm crushing it. I'm doing this, I'm doing that. Look at the pictures. I literally went on a bus tour and saw the house, saw the contractors, everything. And basically they're just buying the house and keeping the money. Like you'll cut the person $100,000. Like, this is your house over here. It'll be done in 3 months, 6 months. Mm-hmm. And they just keep the money. So
interesting. So like, let's look at that. I was trying to rent a place out here in Missouri, and I came across this app where you pay like $10, and then it gets you like 30 attempts where you can visit a home, and it has a lock on there. And then when you have you scan your ID, you go to the house and you scan the code on the lock, it unlocks the house to give you the key. And it gives you amount of time for you to look inside to see if you want to rent it or not. And I believe the houses are winterized. So it's empty. It's all ready to go. And there's people that are pretending to be the owner of that said house, putting it on Facebook Marketplace saying, if you can rent this place for this amount, all you got to do is just give me the money and you can take the key and just move in.
Yeah, no, that's big out here too. the or what they'll try to do is just hustle you for the, hey, it's a $50 application fee, just Zelle me, right? And then mm-hmm. people are just Zelling $50. So yeah, that's a problem. Like, you know, be once again, if someone's renting a house, you can do, like we were talking about searching public records, right? You can look mm-hmm. up that house. You can see who owns it, right? You can see if there's a real estate agent involved. Get a real estate agent involved. Look up public records as an owner. And who are you talking to? When the person says, hey, I'm renting my house, what's your name? Are you the owner? You have just as much right to ask them who they are and what they're doing, just mm-hmm. like they're going to ask you. So, and just never give, if you don't see the house or you don't feel comfortable, don't give anyone an application fee. Mm-hmm. Don't pay for anything.
See, I'm looking you up right now and see if I got, is it Jonathan Michael?
Nope.
Nope.
Michael Delpreet.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it on that one. Guess for investors.gov. I don't see you. Where are you? Are you hiding? I'm going to have to devote my time to looking you up. I'm always curious.
Go for it.
Yeah, I don't see you on here. Michael Delpreet. Yeah, no. You're not populating. Why are you not populating on investor.gov?
Maybe my social media is not good enough.
It's not pulling you.
Well, Jesus. Investors don't, we're not licensed. You don't go onto a public registry and put your information.
No, for this one, for the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, I guess it's for firm or individual, but then it's either name or CD or CRD number.
But why would I be on there?
I don't know. You're an investor. are you an investor?
Oh, got it. Yeah. That has Securities Exchange Commission is if you want to be an accredited investor.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. And you want to be considered an accredited investor so you can invest in certain projects. So this has nothing to do with finding, I don't think it has anything to do with finding whatever you're looking for, scams or whatever. So
yes,
it's, I think you might be a little off track.
Yes. But no, this is good though. Like, because what if I was trying to find information on trying to identify if this is a good person to invest with? My idea was, investor.gov. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I hear you. So is there I'm not familiar of like mm-hmm. a site. There's like big communities like biggerpockets.com. I don't know if you ever mm-hmm. heard of them.
Yes.
Like, you could just maybe search their name. That's one thing. Okay. Here's something you could do. Like we do, like go to Facebook groups.
Yes.
And go and search their names in Facebook groups, man. And like, and if they're active in a community, like go to like whatever Missouri real estate investing, right? And then punch mm-hmm. their name in. If they're true, if they're active buying and selling and they're doing bad business, someone's going to be like, yo, don't work with so-and-so. So that, you know, I wish I could share with you like, hey, don't, there's like a site for
mm-hmm.
don't work with people, you know what I mean? But I'm not specifically aware.
Yes. I know when like your presence or like what you do into the world, the law of attraction does gravitate towards you, and what you can't get rid of is what's on the internet. So that's arming people with the right information to protect themselves, because we got to look at it. It's hard earned money, and what they want in life, it might be something that is pictured as ideal, but they don't understand the amount of work, the effort you have to put into, but also the dangers that can happen in just a blink of an eye by trusting somebody.
Yeah, man. So you have a responsibility to educate yourself the best you can before you lend anybody money or even rent a house, buy a house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there is some bad stuff out there, man.
Beautiful. Now, let's transition into closing. Would you like to you can have the floor, share what you would like to share, and inform our listeners whatever you'd like to inform them.
Yeah, man. Really, like my main thing here is the Arizona Real Estate Investors Association. So if you're looking to invest in Arizona, or if you're in Arizona and you're looking for that proper information, the right people to work with, vetted business associates that have been in the business 5 to 20 years with a great track record, and you're just looking for that the right way to do things, we're your resource here in Arizona. So we go to asria.org, check out our we do about 15 events a month. You know, or we stream events as well. So that's all I'm really here to do, man, is just give the right information to the right people.
Hell yeah. Well, awesome. I do appreciate your time and joining us today.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Excellent. That's it. Were you happy with that?
Yeah, man. No, it was definitely a different style. And I appreciate that, man, rather than the same old 1, 3, 2.
Yeah, no, because like
we went right into it.
Yeah, no, it's exactly what I like to do. I want it to be authentic and real. And it's like, I'm calling you out, like seeing if you're a fraud, like you didn't even know it.
Yeah, just, I was like, what's going on? Like, no, yeah, I like that, man, because when 120 interviews and then you're part of 120 interviews, it's like, it's just that. It's always inspiration, motivation, or like you get to have my same answers down and I'm just getting better at saying them. So I liked being off track and, you know, just being, you know, myself. So,
yeah. Like it's like having a conversation, like two friends, and they're just sitting in the room, like a fly on the wall, like, whoa, they are saying all this cool shit that I wish I knew, but they won't share it with other people because it might be considered frowned upon.
Yeah, like that's exactly what I meant when I was like, the good conversations are the conversations before you hit record. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's cool that you were just doing it. We were just already having that conversation. So, yeah, man, I appreciate your style and I like it. And yeah, man, thanks for having me.
Exactly. That's the way with today's brand. It's how much effort are you willing to go to get noticed and get in front of people?
Well, do you know what I'm doing right now is I committed to 100 podcasts. That's why I signed up for all these podcast connection things. And I have my assistant like calling all just random podcasts. So I'm trying to hit 100 podcasts. And this was like number 7. So,
fuck yeah. Oh man. You know what? It's going to be downhill from you, like from here, because they're not going to have this excitement. Is this?
Yeah. As you can tell, I'm very, expressive.
Yeah, and it's like, whoa. Like, usually you can, like, plant your feet to know what's happening, but I felt like you didn't know what was about to happen next.
I didn't. You got me.
Yes! Oh, my God!
No clue what was going on, man. I was like, let's just chat, man, see where it goes.
Fuck yeah. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us on this adventure of growth and discovery. If you're ready to achieve a sustainable transformation, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And hey, if you've enjoyed the show and want to support it, take a moment to leave a podcast review on Apple or your favorite podcast platform. Stay connected with us on social media for behind-the-scenes sneak peeks, inspiring quotes, and the latest updates. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Just search for YTS The Podcast. Until next time, remember, change is constant. And transformation is inevitable. Embrace the journey and keep rocking your way towards a better you. Stay bold, stay curious, and stay true to yourself. See you next time on your Transformation Station.